You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Hey, it's good to sit down this evening. Got my cup of tea.
And I'm drinking some cranberry juice tonight, so I'm kind of switching it up.
Well, it's pretty warm out. Hey, I want to start out by saying a huge congratulations to the St. Louis Blues for winning the Stanley Cup.
You know, that was a pretty amazing series, and I was so happy to see them win that because they've never won it before, and so congratulations to them.
And, you know, I really had no dog in that fight. I'm a huge, huge hockey fan and have watched hockey for really my whole life. And to see a team that's never won the Stanley Cup win it was, I thought it was pretty cool. And another huge congratulations to the USA women's soccer team for their second win over Chile. So they keep moving on.
3-0.
Very exciting. And one more bit of good news that I would just want to tell you about.
Well, you're just all full of good news today.
I'm full of good news. And don't worry, we're going to get to some bad news, but I'm going to start talking to you about good news. And that is the things that, again, you never hear in the news. You never hear from the fake news media. So you're going to hear it here. And that is the good news about our economy. And our economy just continues to boom under President Trump. And the newest figures out say that small business confidence is at its highest level in a year, at least. What does that mean? Does anybody care that small business has high confidence levels? Yes.
Well, yeah,
why?
Especially if you're a small business owner, but is not small business, Linda, the real economic engine of the United States?
It absolutely is. And when small business has confidence, and they are the people that are dealing with on the ground, they're like the ground game for America, right? And they're not the pie in the sky. They're the guys out there working every day, and they are the people that are dealing with other Americans. And when their confidence is high, business is really good. That's a really important economic indicator. So that's really good news.
And you're exactly right, because this last year, we have hired more people at Martinelli & Associates than I can remember hiring in the 5 previous years. So I just know that, you know, due to blessings and reputation, our company's business is doing well. And I talk with you every day about your business, and your business is through the roof. So, I mean, you're getting tons and tons of orders. You do B2B, the big businesses. But you also do some small business, relatively small. You know, small businesses, meaning companies under a couple of thousand.
No,
you know,
we work with anybody, and that's, you know, any business. So that's, but the economic indicators that I see just looking at my own business is that the companies are willing to spend more money, and they're healthier right now, and they're optimistic about the future.
You know, let me say something, because, you know, you don't do any national news. I do some national news, as you know, as a consultant, as a media consultant. But I'll tell you what, and I've said this to you a few times, whenever you go to, like, oh, Fox is a great one, and I love Fox Business, and we listen to Fox Business and watch it. But you know who's missing, especially on the Sunday shows? Linda Martinelli. And what I mean by that is someone who is a small business entrepreneur. We're always hearing from the pundits and the CEOs of these major corporations and these stock brokerage firms and everything like that. But I'll tell you what, Lynn, that doesn't resonate with me. But when I sit down and I talk with you every single day about business, and you have an international footprint, I learn so much more from you than I learn from those people. So I just would wish that these major networks, I don't care which ones they are, but the major networks would look at bringing on, as a pundit, a small business entrepreneur?
Well, I think that a panel of them would be really good because they are the boots on the ground. And really, you're right. We don't have anybody out there from that perspective. And what we do have a lot of, Ron, is a lot of people that have no idea what they're talking about because they've never run a business. And, you know, that really doesn't resonate with me. And they really put out a lot of misinformation. I'll tell you who the guy that I respect the most is on TV talking about business is Charles Payne on Fox. Because when I listen to him, he is just absolutely spot on. And he backs up everything he says with facts and figures, and I love it. And he understands big business, but he also understands small business. So he's a really good person to listen to. But yeah, the small business owner is really the engine. But I want to give you another really good piece of news about the economy, and that is that wages are up 10 months in a row more than 3% each time. So that is a huge amount. And that is has not happened in 10 years in this country. So we're not hearing that in the media. What we have heard and what I've heard in a lot of the Democratic presidential candidates is that, oh, wages aren't going up and they're stagnant and this is not happening. No, yes, it is. The facts are that it is. And it's happening in spades right now.
Well, don't you think, Linda, that there's two reasons why the mainstream media doesn't cover that important information and you don't hear this, you know, from the politicians, especially on the Democratic or the Socialist side? And that is for two reasons. Number one, they're anti-Trumpers, and they don't want this president or his administration to succeed in anything. But number two, they can't activate their base if we're doing such a good job with our economy, and the average voter's wages are going up. You know, they'd vote for Trump, for God's sakes. You don't want them to do that if you're a Democrat or if you're a socialist.
Exactly. Well, and for this quarter alone, the GDP estimate went up 50%. So we are really in an economy that is humming along nicely. And, you know, hopefully America will choose to keep it that way because President Trump has done a great job with it. So some more good news is that President Trump has tapped Tom Holman. If you remember, he was the acting director of ICE.
I love Tom Holman. I don't think there's anybody that I've seen or heard of in the last several years that is more intelligent, more articulate, knows more about what's going on at the border and with border security than Tom Holman.
I totally agree. And Tom has not yet accepted this position. He wants this position to be, it's a czar position, which is interesting.
Well, you know what's cool about the czar position is Obama pulled that one. If you remember, he had 50.
A lot.
Exactly. And but what I understand, you know, that if you have a czar, then you don't have to go through congressional or Senate approval. They can't mess with you. They can't hold it up. It's your czar and you're going with it.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Holman, he wants that the job to be structured in a way that that person can coordinate activities from Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, Department of Defense, Health and Human Services, because they all are part of the fix to the problem. So they all need to work together and not separately.
Yeah, it's a liaison. It's a networking position, and also one that reports directly to the President of the United States, because really czars are almost kind of like cabinet members.
Yes, and hopefully this will come about because I think it would be really, really beneficial for the country and for all of those agencies who I think are not working in concert as well as they could be, and I think he's absolutely the guy to fix it. So I want to say, one of the things about DHS is that DHS has not been seeking out the families that are still here from having entered the country and not reported for their court date. So there's over 98% of the people from some countries that have not reported. And for example, in 2017, the families that came in, 98% are still here, and there are judges' orders to have them removed.
Well, yeah, there's bench warrants for these people's arrest, basically. I mean, if you are detained, when you come into the United States, which they are all detained, and they're released on their own recognizance with a promise to appear in court. And so the promise to appear in court is a document that they have. They do not receive visas. They do not receive anything but a document that they must keep with them that says you are in the United States only until your date of hearing at this particular court on this date and time where you are mandated to appear. And then we'll see what happens to you after that. And they must keep that document with them all the time.
Right. And we need to enforce those actions. So when 98% of the families from 2017 have not, you know, left the country or reported to court, then, you know, we're doing nothing about it. And that's a huge problem because we now have 50 million people in this country who weren't born here, who have showed up and were, you know, having to provide a lot of services.
Well, let me tell you one thing about that is we are so busy with this border crisis. I call it a border war on immigration, with them causing the war. But we are so busy trying to play catch up football with all these hundreds of thousands of people sneaking into this country. We cannot go, even if they find somebody in the field and they run them, you know, for warrants, for detentions, and it comes up. It will come up through NCIC, the federal system, and say, hey, this person needs to be detained. They've got a bench warrant to appear in court. They didn't appear. Take them into custody. We're not even doing that because we're so busy catching up.
Right. Well, one of the things that Congress should be doing, should have done, and should be doing immediately, which they probably have no intention of doing, is this 20-day hold is absolutely ludicrous. Because when you get a family unit in, and by the way, I just want to tell you that 25 to 30% are not real family units. They do DNA testing. They're not real family units. This is all a lot of bogus stuff. But in 20 days, there is not enough time for people to get their day in court. Why would that be? Because 900,000 of those cases are backlogged in our court. So if they would just change that time frame from 20 days to, say, 45 days, we would have a lot better results. Of course, a better result even is having them held in a different country, and then, you know, we wouldn't have them here. But the thing is that our Congress is doing nothing whatsoever to fix these issues, which are huge issues for the American people. 20 days is a ridiculously short amount of time.
No, it's exactly right. And I think Trump is pretty smart, understanding that the way things are now, the democratically controlled Congress is going to continue with its obstruction and resistance with things that Trump wants to do at the border, on the United States side of the border. And so the only thing that the Trump administration can do, understanding that, is to work out treaties, agreements, or whatever with all these other countries that are pushing people to come into the United States and say, look, just have centers, asylum centers, where these people can go in their own country and apply for asylum rather than, you know, coming all the way up through Mexico and breaching the border of the United States, because he understands just exactly what you said. We are completely inundated with these people.
Well, the treaty that happened after World War II that was to have the United States review asylum requests, that needs to be changed as well, because that was for a different time in a different era. And now, I mean, this has just gotten ridiculous. By the way, in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis has signed the ban on sanctuary cities in Florida, which I think is a great step.
No, I think that needs to be done. And, you know, I think our Governor Greg Abbott has done something similar here in Texas, but there has to be some enforcement. In other words, these cities that claim to be sanctuary cities, the state and the federal government have really got to step in and figure out a way of enforcing that. I don't know whether it's to keep money from them. I think they already tried that on the federal side, and one of the Obama appointee judges, federal judges, threw that in the file 13 so the federal government can't withhold money from sanctuary, cities.
Well, that's actually going through the courts right now again.
Okay.
And there is a, I believe that there's a bill in the Senate about that as well. So, I don't know if we will get to change that or not, because right now I'm not seeing a lot of anything coming out of our Congress and Senate, to be honest. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, and what they'll do is they'll just keep kicking this can down the road. Things will get worse and worse and worse, especially for our border cities and our border communities. And we're going to be, like I said, it's a war. We're not winning this war. And you and I just spoke the other day, and we were just in San Antonio last night, and they've got somewhere between 350 and 500 Congolese refugees. They're French-speaking Africans from the Congo, and they just dumped them out in the middle of town, and all the social service organizations are running around, and the city of San Antonio is running around trying to find out what to do with these people. But the people they found in interviewing them are extremely secretive. They've got money. Some of them have got rolls. They saw rolls of $100 bills, but yet they're out on the street already in downtown San Antonio begging for money, and they will not discuss the money aspect and how they got from Africa all the way over here to the United States. That's a big secret, and that really worries me, Linda.
Right. When they get interviewed, they simply say, well, we're here now, so that's all that matters. Well, no, they were funded to come here and to be dumped. Now, they're headed to Portland, Maine.
Why would they be going to
Portland,
Maine? Right.
There's something really interesting about that, and something probably nefarious about that, because somebody paid for them to come here and go to Portland, Maine, and I don't know why. And I guess, we're going to find out at some point in history, whether it's a year from now or 10 years from now, what's going on.
Well, it's interesting because you sort of, when we were talking last night, we were downtown San Antonio, down on the Riverwalk, having a nice time. And you came up with something that just smacked me right in the face. And you said there has got to be some sort of plan that we don't know about where they are taking certain types of refugees. In other words,
yes,
not the United States of America, but who's ever bringing these people over, there is some sort of plan to stick certain types of people in certain areas of the United States. Just like you had the Somalis up in Michigan, now you've got French Congolese, which are Africans, going to Portland, Maine. What the heck is that all about?
Well, I have a sneaking suspicion somewhere George Soros or some of his minions are involved.
Me too. How about a cup of coffee or some more cranberry juice?
Or some more tea.
Okay.
The Out and Out Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, now I have to get to my Frost My Socks of the day.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I was watching Bernie Sanders, and I was feeling the burn.
And not necessarily in a good way.
Not in a good way. Because he was talking about his economic bill of rights. Have you seen this?
I heard him talking about it, yeah.
Wow. So I want to tell you what his Bill of Rights says, because as he was saying every one of these, 100 things went through my mind like, no, that's wrong, no. So the first thing in his Bill of Rights is that he wants every American to be guaranteed a decent job that pays a living wage with reasonable paid vacation time and that's their guarantee. I'm so tempted to stop right here, Ron, and say everything I disagree with about that, but I'll wait.
Well, let me jump in here for just a second. I know you've got a few things you want to talk to me about, because I can tell just looking at your face. But just, you know, you hear people say things like this, and then just stop and slow down. Every American guaranteed a living wage and a retirement and paid vacation. Every American. Have you all looked around to see every American?
Exactly.
Okay, have you seen that? Every American. Every American. You know, right now, there's 65, just one city, 65,000 homeless people in the city of Los Angeles. 65,000. Every one of those 65,000, well, not every one of them, but let's just talk about the American citizens, 65,000. So you're going to say that you're going to guarantee a living wage to every single one of these people, right? I mean, come on, get real, okay? Because there are people that do not want to work. They don't want to work. And you're going to guarantee a living wage. And how much is a living wage?
Well, you're okay. So you're making me go there.
Oh, well, so, let's have that conversation.
Okay. So when you say whatever living wage they decide, okay,
who decides?
Well, whoever decides, Ron.
And we don't know what that number is. What's that number?
But
a living wage.
Let's think about the consequences of that. So now, to make it a living wage, you have to have housing that's affordable for those people to live under that wage that you're giving them. So now you have to dictate how and where they're going to live and what they're going to pay. I got to tell you, if you are a property owner or a renter, you're in big trouble. You need to think about all of the consequences and all of the dominoes that start falling when you start making rules like this about the government controlling what you're going to pay somebody and that everybody is entitled to it. Because you take those homeless people who are now entitled to a job, or you take all of these 50 million immigrants that are pouring into our country that have no job skills, what job will you give them? So now you're going to have to make up a job, which a lot of countries do, and pay them something from where?
Oh, wait a minute. You're walking down a road that I have heard about before, and the guy that started this road was Karl Marx, and then Joseph Stalin.
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Oh, I see, so you're going there, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going everywhere
here.
Good for
you. Okay.
So let's talk about number two of what in Bernie's plan you will be entitled to is you will be entitled, every American, to quality health care. So let's just take that to its next level. If you have common sense, instead of just listening to those words that sound so great that I'm going to get great health care, baloney. There are not going to be any doctors that want to serve you because nobody's going to want to be a doctor under that system. And the doctors will be so overwhelmed, and the cost will be so overwhelming to the quote-unquote system, that you will not get good health care. You will get the worst health care. You're going to get death panels that say that once you're X age or you have X type of illness, we're not going to serve you. No. This is another thing that people have to look beyond what those words are that sound good.
The rhetoric.
And see what really, really happens from
that.
Well,
you know, here's a couple of great examples. Number one, I had a former relative, okay, that was a nurse in Canada, and I didn't know anything about, you know, Canada, Canadian healthcare, but she was deeply involved in that system, and she would tell me the most amazing things, and she would say, you know what, there's only so many dialysis machines, so if you are an older person and you needed dialysis, and I think they needed like twice a week or something, and they're in that machine for about 4 hours at a time, and there are younger people that need dialysis, guess what? You're getting kicked right off the dialysis list, and they're going to take those younger people because you're older and they really don't need you anymore. You've already paid all your taxes and everything, and you're in the sunset of your life. They're going to take those young people in there. And then let's just take a look at who's going to pay for all of this, and look at just Calisuela for a minute. Let's just take a look at California. You got 3 million illegal aliens living in the state of California, and then
I think it's more like 5 million, Ron.
Oh, well, I was reading an article just the other day, and Governor Newsom just signed a bill that's going to give free health care to illegal aliens between the ages of 19 and 25 or 26.
Of which there's 900,000 of them.
And they've determined that that's going to cost somewhere between $100 and $130 million from the tax revenue.
Yeah, okay? for 90,000 people.
Exactly.
How are you going to do this for the entire country? So you need to really look at all of the consequences of the things. And if you look at nothing else, just look at the veterans' healthcare system that they messed up so badly. And that was just a portion of the population. And is that what you want for your healthcare?
You know, and exactly right. And then you were talking about housing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So another one of his points is actually on his Bill of Rights is that everybody will get affordable housing.
Well, let's talk about that, Linda. Go ahead.
Well, what is affordable housing? And so now you have to tie that housing to the money that you're going to make sure that they get, right? And you're going to determine what is affordable for people. So people aren't going to have the free will that they have now. They're going to be, you know, shuffled into, I don't know, basically like Section 8 kind of housing.
And then take a look at the housing that you have. Look at who has some of the most atrocious Section 8 housing, you know, either state or government subsidized housing. Take a look at New York City, take a look at Boston, take a look at Baltimore, take a look at Detroit, take a look at Los Angeles. I mean, you name it. You pick the big metropolitan city that has Section 8 housing, and it is full of drugs, it's full of gangs, they destroy the property, the people never feel safe. There's your government subsidized housing for you. It's probably, you have probably some of the most unsafe war zones that we have anywhere in the world are found in government subsidized housing in the United States. Linda, you know, you're a former police officer from Los Angeles, and you were pretty close to South Central where you were doing your stuff. Look at the projects. Look at that. I was up in the Bay Area. Look at some of the projects that we had up there. It was a total war zone. But the other thing, let's talk about not just the Section 8 housing, which are built by governments, right? Most of them. But let's take a look at property owners that own apartment complexes. And look at it in San Francisco. You own an apartment complex in San Francisco. And let's say somebody sold it to you. You're the new buyer and you can't charge what you want. Because it's fixed rent.
It's going to be fixed by the government,
right.
and people are going to be able to go in there. Well, the other thing on his economic Bill of Rights is that you will be entitled to a clean environment. So they are going to decide what that clean environment looks like and what the cost is and the regulations to all the businesses that are involved in getting that cleaner environment. It could mean that you can't drive a car. It could mean that you have to have an electric car. It could mean that if you have a printing company, you can't use certain inks or solvents. It could mean that if you are a company that makes bottles or plastics or things like that, everything will be regulated to give you what they determine for you is that clean environment.
And going back to if you're a property owner and like have an apartment complex and you want to get involved in government subsidized housing like Section 8, they can absolutely force you to retrofit all your buildings with solar panels.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you pay for it. You pay for it.
Right.
So now you've got, you know, rent control, so you can't charge more rent than the government tells you can charge. Plus now they forced you to just retrofit stuff. You could go broke easily.
Well, and there's so many consequences to this. The last thing on his economic Bill of Rights is that you will be entitled to a secure retirement. So they're going to decide what a secure retirement means to you. Does it mean that you can live in one of those
government subsidized
one bedroom you know, apartments and eat dog food, or what does that mean? So every American is going to be entitled to these things, and it will be at the expense of the Americans that, you know, are more successful. So when you start, and he wants like a 90% tax rate on those people so that he can fund all of this. So that then takes their success away, takes their motivation away. If it was me, I would move somewhere in the world where I could be rewarded for my efforts and have the rewards that I have earned, right? Not that somebody else has not earned. Now, I want to just compare this, because Mark Levin brought this up, and I was absolutely astounded. In 1936, you mentioned Joseph Stalin, and Joseph Stalin had a Soviet constitution.
Right.
Okay. Here are the points in his Soviet constitution. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, the right to work. Payment in accordance to the quality and type of work that you do. So they're going to determine what you get paid.
Another way of saying you're entitled to a living wage.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yes.
That's the same thing.
The right to rest and leisure and vacation with full pay. Same thing as Bernie's saying. The right to maintenance and old age. Same thing he's saying, right to a secure retirement. What does maintenance mean? What does that mean? Maintenance.
I'm not really sure. I want somebody maintaining me in my old age.
Wow.
Well, I'm not sure, but it's rhetoric that needs to be explained by Mr. Sanders.
Oh, and I'm sorry, missed one from Bernie Sanders, but it's also in Joseph Stalin, so I'll address it now, which is free education for everybody. Free, complete education from, you know, the start of school to the end of the university.
And they're all indoctrinated into, what do you think, socialist ideology.
Yes, and free medical. So where do you think Bernie Sanders got every one of his points? It is word for word the same as Joseph Stalin, Soviet Constitution in 1936. That is pretty scary. And what's even scarier to me, Ron, is that when they take surveys and our indoctrinated college students think that this is a great idea, that is as scary as it gets for me.
And these are some of the same college students that only want to live in the dorms their first year.
The snowflakes.
Okay. They want to live in the dorms for the first year. Okay. They don't want to, you know, then they want to move where? They want to move off campus, right? To better housing. What do you think? That's what that is. You know, move off the college campus, move out of the tuition subsidized, right? Room and board. You don't want to eat in the commissary, right? You don't want to eat the student food. You don't want to have the student food card. Do you remember some of that? I do. I had the student food card. I was on an athletic scholarship. So I had to live in the dorms, right? My first couple of years. And I had to have the student card, because I couldn't afford anything else. And they were paying for that. And believe me, you didn't want to live in the dorms because it was lousy, and you didn't want to eat the student food because it was like military food.
But basically, people will be living in dorms, and they will be
exactly.
So the government, according to Bernie, really should control everything in your life, and you know, have income equality. So where is what made America great? Where is the motivation for people to work and succeed and give themselves a better life? He wants to take all of that away. And I know that there is no society in the world that has worked in.
Well, and you and I have a few. And the first one that I want to bring up is Venezuela, because, you know, we're always calling California Calisuela, based after the Venezuela model. But let's just understand that Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, just recently, in a big speech, okay, before his own people, he just admitted that their economy has failed. They have severe shortages of food and medicine and public service, what he referred to as public service paralysis. In other words, none of the public services work. So the garbage doesn't work, the water doesn't work. And, you know, just recently, they had a power outage in Caracas, Venezuela, which is the country's capital, that affected over 80% of the population. And so they're saying, well, you know, President Maduro, what up? You know, what's going on? And then he basically said, and this is huge for a socialist or a Marxist or a communist to admit, but I'm going to quote what he said. He said, the economic and production models that we have tried to date have failed. I mean, there it is, succinctly. There is no difference between the economic and the production models of Venezuela than you're getting from Bernie Sanders. And you have a couple of other countries
you have North Korea, where they control every single thing that you do. They control how much food you get. They control just every single thing, including your speech.
You got the Soviet Union.
Yes.
You've got Nicaragua. You know, I'm bouncing around.
You've got Cuba.
You've got Cuba. You've got Greece.
Greece.
These are all...
Oh, and speaking of Greece...
Go ahead.
Greece just voted out the socialist portion of their government leaders. They just had an election. So they have figured out, after all of their riots and things that they went through in the past few years, that this isn't working for them either. Why would we want to bring it to this country?
Well, you know, and the European Union, and Greece is a part of the European Union, they have been the welfare baby of the EU because they constantly have to go back and renegotiate their debt to the different countries in the European Union. And the European Union's getting fed up with it. And they're saying, man, we are constantly subsidizing these Greeks. And what are they getting? They're getting everything that Bernie Sanders has been talking about in his socialist model, what he calls a democratic socialist model in the United States. They're getting, you know, everybody gets a job, everybody gets subsidized housing, they get, you know, they used to get 6 weeks of paid vacation, and then I think you and I had a coffee conversation where I was discussing that when the government reduced it to 4 weeks of paid vacation, they rioted. So the European Union is going, man, this country's a dog. We don't want to keep subsidizing these welfare recipients.
It's kind of scary because when you look at those people, they would be the kind of people that would go for what Bernie would say because they think that that's going to work for them because they don't understand the beauty of the whole American system.
Well, what they get caught up in, Linda, is they get caught up in the rhetoric, the flowing words,
the
fancy words, the democratic socialism, the altruism of the whole thing, and they don't break it down like I suggested when we first started talking about this. They don't break it down word for word. They don't parse it out and say, wait a minute, what do these terms mean? And I like your saying that we are, when we do things like this, when we go down this road, there are unintended consequences for these things. But you know what? There is already a model and a series of models that a failure of this same socialism agenda. How about our last drink of whatever?
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
been talking about a lot of serious kind of things, and I'm kind of a nut for science facts.
And so, I've got probably a few for you, too. So okay. Why don't you begin?
All right. Well, you know, just some random trivia science facts. So if uncoiled and put end to end, all of the DNA from an average person's body would reach from here to Pluto. Well, I'm saying that wrong. They can reach Pluto from the sun and back 17 times.
One person's DNA.
Yep. Yep.
How could that possibly be?
They contain 500,000 to 2.5 million nucleotide pairs. Don't ask me, but when it's uncoiled, it apparently goes a heck of a long way.
Well, that's a pretty good scientific fact. Would you like a fact about the human body? Because, you know, I have the medical background, Linda.
Okay, Ronaldo.
All right. So this goes out to guys, right? Because guys that have wives or girlfriends that have a headache when the guy wants to have sex. So here's what they need to know. Actually, when the body is preparing for sex, an analgesic is dumped into the body, and we know that. You know, one of the things is called, dopamine. Now, dopamine isn't a real analgesic, but you get the point. It's a euphoric, and what that does while you're having sex is it takes away headaches and joint pains. And actually, while you're having sex, if you're doing it right and having a pretty good time, you shouldn't feel any pain at all.
So next time I want to have sex, you can't say you have a headache, because I'll just say that.
No.
We'll solve it.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say, well, wait a minute. Sex is exactly what you need.
That's right.
Let me help out here. I'm a doctor. Trust me.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Well, did you know that the human body carries more bacterial cells than human cells? And the bacteria in our bodies is mostly good, even though we carry all kinds of stuff to kill it, the sprays and the this and that we're carrying nowadays. But really, we need that bacteria. It helps us digest our food and helps our bodies function well.
But it also helps us assimilate with other bad things that would try to attack us.
Yes.
And, you know, you're right. That's why people should wash their hands and things like that. You know, for instance, we like playing around with the Desi dog, especially me, and I'm always petting her and kissing her and rolling around on the ground with her. God knows where that dog has been. So listen, I've got one for you.
Okay.
Sneezes. Okay? So when you sneeze, the air that comes out of your mouth and sometimes out of your nose, want to take a guess at how fast it comes out, miles per hour?
Oh, I would have no idea. Does it come out at like 1,000 miles an hour?
No, that would, you'd blow your head off, okay? Oh. No, it comes out at 100 miles an hour. Isn't that interesting? Okay.
Well, yeah. And that's when people don't cover their mouth and they're spraying those germs at 100 miles an hour in my direction, especially on airplanes. Have you ever taken your hands and made little circles out of your thumb and forefinger and looked through them like little glasses?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I teach that on the range to teach about tunnel vision.
Well, if you were to break your glasses or lose your glasses and you are really, you know, in trouble that you can't see, you actually can do that with your fingers and put them up to your eyes and make little small holes to see through. Because what happens is the light comes in a more directed manner into your eyes, and it helps you to be able to see. So it's kind of like you want to make it like a pinhole. And when the light comes into your retina, you'll be able to see clearer than not.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I may even try that.
Quick fix in an emergency.
Okay. So you know what appendage you don't need?
I'm sure it's something on your toes.
You're exactly right. Okay. So the pinky toe, the number 5 toe, science has established you don't even need, and you don't even know, they don't even know why you have it. It doesn't affect balance. It has nothing to do except it hurts when it gets shoved into a tight shoe or a tight sock. So listen, here's the key. if the bad guys ever get you and they torture you and they tell you they're going to cut something off, you say, oh my God, whatever you do, don't cut my pinky toes off.
I like my pinky toe. I would like it to stay. Thank you. So did you know that the heart pumps the entire blood volume around the body in just how long?
2 minutes.
60 seconds.
Darn it, I was off. And I learned that at medical school. I should have known that. I feel bad. Well, I've got one for you, Linda, actually for guys. All right. So guys, I don't know if they've ever wondered why a lot of guys wake up with what we used to call an emo early morning hard on.
Oh.
Okay. I think we can say that on America Out Loud, can't we?
Goodness. Hopefully.
But anyway, it's actually fascinating. And the reason that a lot of guys wake up with an erection in the morning is because it's a culmination of erections that they have all night long that they're not even aware of that take place every 30 to 60 minutes.
Well, I don't understand what that means, that it's a culmination of that. I don't really understand.
Well, I mean, it's just
means.
Like perhaps it's maybe the last one of the sleep cycle.
I just figure that they're like having some sort of dream. I don't know what's going on.
Well, that could be in conjunction with that. Sure. As a professional, I can I can tell you that.
Well,
your turn.
I have some interesting stats for you that you'll like. So an average person walks the distance equal to 5 times around the earth in their lifetime.
And isn't the earth something like about 21,000 miles in circumference or something like that?
Well, if you...
That's a lot.
Yeah. If a moderately active person walks for around 7,500 steps a day and that average is maintained till that person is 80 years old, they will have walked 216,262,500 steps in a lifetime.
That's
and
amazing.
That's equivalent to 110,000 miles.
That's pretty good. Hey, how about the nose? You want to hear a statistic about the nose?
Okay. I'm afraid after the last one.
Well, I'm sort of toning it down, Linda, okay? We do have the FCC to worry about. But anyway, so... Would you like to take a guess at how many individual odors or scents the nose remembers?
Oh, gosh, I would think it would remember thousands.
Incredible. Take a guess. How many? You're right.
10,000?
50,000 scents. Okay? 50,000 individual scents. Now, I know this for a fact personally, and I'm sure that you'll back me up on this. I think everybody would, is that when I smell something that's very distinct, it depending on the scent, it can take me back to when I was a child.
Oh, sure.
And I remembered that same scent, and it will bring back old memories of me being in a certain place. And, you know, something like that. Would you like me to give you an example
yes,
of that?
Yes, give me an example.
Okay. So when I was 4 years old, my folks, and we lived in San Francisco, and we had a babysitter for me, like a daycare babysitter, that lived somewhere near the wharf where the... Hills Brothers Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, where the big Hills Brothers Coffee factory was, where they would actually, you know, cook the coffee beans and everything like that. And from their house, I could smell the coffee beans when they were being cooked, roasted.
Yeah.
And to this day, when I smell Hills Brothers Coffee, it's just Hills Brothers. When I smell Hills Brothers Coffee, the first thing I think about is being 4 years old and being in the backyard of that daycare center and smelling that coffee.
Well, that's funny because I had the Wonder Bread bread factory near our house. Actually, it wasn't very near our house.
I had a bakery a couple of blocks away from mine.
It was a number of miles away, but the thing is, if the wind was going in the right direction, that smell would come. Oh my gosh, it was just heavenly. And I still love the smell of fresh baking bread.
And speaking of bread, I love real French bread when it's being baked.
Yes.
And when I was working in San Jose and I was working the midnight shift when I was a very young officer, there was a bakery on one of the avenues. And when we would drive by on patrol at about 3 o'clock in the morning, you could smell the fresh baked French bread. And I knew that place opened up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And on my way back to the station, I would stop by there and get a fresh, warm loaf of real French bread.
Nothing like it. So, hey, the rainforest, the Amazon rainforest, with its diverse species of plants and really animals also, but we're talking about the plants right now, that covers 2.1 million square miles. And do you know that that rainforest produces 20% of the entire Earth's oxygen? And, you know, it's so critical, and I hate to see them taking some of the rainforest away because, you know, it is a very critical place on our planet. So hopefully they are, you know, doing their ecological efforts to make sure that they maintain that 2.1 million square miles because we need it. And another kind of gross statistic for you scientifically is that you shed skin every day, and every single hour the body sheds around 600,000 particles of skin. Kind of gross. And that's about a pound and a half of skin that you shed a year. In your lifetime, you shed about 105 pounds of skin. And your skin completely replaces itself on your body 900 times in a lifetime.
That's really incredible.
It's fascinating.
Well, you know, you can actually see yourself, you know, shedding skin. And depending on, you know, the time of the year, especially, you know, you get sunburns, you get this, you get that. You know, you're putting, you know, the soap that has a little pumice in it. I actually have some of that. I've got some Irish Spring pumice-based soap that I want when I want to clean all my, what do you call it?
Exfoliate.
Thank you. There's the word. Thank you. I knew a woman would know that word. When you're doing that, and I probably do that about once a week, just to like clean my body off. And it just feels, it feels clean, you know, when you do it. So that's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. Lastly, my last scientific fact of the day is, do you know what the largest living structure on Earth is?
Living structure?
Yeah.
Well, I would have to say it would have to be something like a giant reef.
The Great Barrier Reef.
I'll be darned. Okay, I got it.
Yep, it's 2,000 kilometers long. And, you know, it's made up of coral islands and coral polyps and, you know, those types of things. And it's visible entirely from space. It's just fascinating.
Well, aren't we losing it too?
Well, we due to climate. Well, they say climate change. Well, I want to talk about that for a second. But man-made disasters and pollution. Sometimes some of the colonies in the reef do get destroyed. But you know, I mean, Ron. To that point, to my mind, that's just life. I mean, we can definitely do damage to coral reefs, but. You know, when we were in Grand Cayman, I had used to dive on a reef there that I thought was the most beautiful reef I had ever seen. And the last time we were there, it was completely gone. It was completely gray and sandblasted, and there was not a living thing on it.
And that's out at Stingray City.
Well, right? It's not at Stingray City, but it's in that general
vicinity.
Well,
I remember you took me out there. Yeah. We got on the tour and we went out there and did the snorkeling out there with all the stingrays, and showed me.
But that was because of a hurricane.
Yes.
So a lot of this is just natural things that happen in the universe. But, you know, I read an article which just briefly was talking about, you know, this whole global warming thing, which so much of has been proven to be a hoax, but the news media has not put that out yet. But so much of it really has been proven that the information was hidden, was mismanaged, was not told truthfully. But in places where they said that the glaciers were receding and, oh my gosh, they're going to be gone by, you know, 10 years from now. Now those glaciers have grown 25%.
And they conveniently removed the signs.
They removed the signs. Right.
They didn't tell anybody. They just took the signs
down.
Didn't
put it out. Didn't blast it out in the media, right? But they removed the signs. And then I think you told me that you had something to tell me tonight about a dog. And I need to hear whatever that is because I love dog stories.
Well, things, as we both know, living in Texas, we get a lot of strange police stories coming out of Texas.
What does that have to do with a dog?
This all has to do with the police officer with the Kilgore, Texas Police Department. And he gets sent out on a call for service about an aggressive dog. So lo and behold, he gets out there and there is this dog and he's pretty angry. And so the cop needs to secure the dog. But the dog's kind of a aggressive dog. So the police officer's kind of scared of him. So what he does is he opens up the rear prisoner compartment of his patrol car. And of course, as you remember, that's a caged prisoner compartment, right? So there's no access to the front of the car. But he gets out and he makes a mistake and he opens up, okay, so picture he opens up the right rear passenger prisoner compartment door and, you know, and he's telling the dog, okay, you know, come on inside the car, come on inside the car. And he throws like a little bit of food inside the rear prisoner compartment of the car. But what he forgot is when he got out of the car, he left the driver's side door open on the car. And so the dog came around and looked at the prisoner compartment on the right rear, but then moved around to the left front driver's side door and jumped inside the driver's compartment. And the cop goes, oh my God.
Tell me he's driving the car.
No. His car was parked, but he'd left the stupid driver's side door open with the car on. Okay. And so then he goes and he closes the door and he goes, I got you now. But what happened was he left his lunch inside the driver's compartment of the vehicle. And the dog was a little bit big. The dog keys the microphone that, you know, is on the stand the car and starts going into this guy's lunch. And the dispatcher radios back to the cop who's only got his hand packed. He's got his portable radio and he goes, what's all that noise? And it's like munching and crunching. Well, the dog opened up a packet of beef jerky that the cop had just bought and chowed that whole thing down. And so, I mean, that's my story. The cop had to call animal control and they had to, because he was scared to get that dog out of there. But he lost his lunch and he lost all his beef jerky.
Lesson learned. Close your door.
Close your door. Well, that's all I've got for tonight. But you know what, Linda? I wanted to just kind of remind some of our coffee listeners that if you miss talking while married, you know, you can catch us in a variety of ways. And a couple of the ways that you can catch us is on Apple and Android and the new Alexa. So you can catch us on that. But don't forget, you can also catch us on iHeartRadio. So pick up that free Apple app, get the Alexa app, and get the Android app. That's free on America Out Loud.
Well, all of our shows are on podcast within 48 hours. And people can listen as much as they want.
And you know, a lot of people listen to Talking While Married on their free apps, going up into podcasts while they're driving around in the car.
Exactly.
And they just, these days, they just sync their phones, to their radio, and they can catch us anytime they want. And don't forget, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we're on Stitcher. Are you ready to say goodnight?
Ready to say goodnight.
All right. Let's go see the dog because the dog's already in bed.